Bring yourself back online.
Remember. Welcome back to Freeze All Motor Functions, a Westworld podcast that doesn't sound like anything to me and doesn't take itself too seriously, presented by Bolin Media. We are here today to break down and digest Season 4, Episode 6 of HBO's Westworld. Ross, there's only two episodes left after this.
I just realized that if you do double West Sides with your hands, you're throwing the Westworld logo.
Wow.
Which I'm pretty excited about right now.
It's extremely Houston of you.
Yeah.
By the way, I am your host, Jared Borislow, known to many as J-Bone, joined as always by Caleb Build number 215 himself, Mr. Ross Bolin. How are you, Ross?
What? 215? I've been fucking dead for a minute.
Yeah. Oh, you haven't. Yeah.
Yeah.
You were probably the guy who did that first handprint on the wall.
Yeah.
The very first one.
That was all I got off, huh?
Yeah. But you did make it through the little storm drain there.
Hey.
That's huge for you.
I made progress for the squad, yeah. And that's all I wanted to do.
You know what? You were probably one of the builds who did absolutely jack shit. You were probably just like whacking it in the fucking chamber. You just got incinerated and they're like, God damn it.
This guy didn't contribute anything.
The other guys are looking at you. They're like, this motherfucker.
Yeah, there's always one person in the group project who doesn't contribute at all. And I was that Caleb.
We are not joined by Serena today as she is sick, but she is here in spirit.
Yeah, course. I'm still staring at the computer where she normally is as if her face would be there. So,
yeah,
in spirit.
Let's jump right in to breaking down this episode of Westworld. The title of Westworld Season 4, Episode 6 is Fidelity. According to my friend Will Capadia, Fidelity Investments operates a brokerage firm, manages a large family of mutual funds, provides fund distribution, and oh my God, that's actually the page for Fidelity Investments.
Oh, that's okay. Not the definition.
Will Capadia, you son of a bitch.
Man, he really let us down this time. First time.
First time. Okay, so instead, for the first time ever, I'm going to throw it over to Ross and make him explain the episode title.
All right, so Fidelity is where... All right, seriously, if I did this without Googling the word at all, it's where they test to see if AI can pass as not AI, I think.
So in terms of the show, yes. I had never heard of fidelity testing as like an AI thing until season two.
When they invented it.
When William was working on Logan Delos.
So,
yeah. The parallels that we see between what Charloris is doing with Caleb and what William do with Logan Delos it's so on the nose. Like, every single part of it, she clearly just jacked. She's swagger jacking him.
Right, which is kind of disappointing because, I mean, it's one of the piece of the show that I'm the most, like, scratching my head about right now is her whole strategy is seemingly lacking in sophistication in terms of what she's attempting to do, but we'll obviously get to that.
You're saying how it's been like 23 years and she's still doing the same failed process.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
I think the main difference to me is that she's trying to get something out of Caleb. She's trying to use fidelity testing to get this information out of Caleb, the information about how he's an outlier, what he has that makes him like impervious to her commands or able to disobey her.
Right.
Whereas William was just trying to make Logan Delos a human, right?
Yes. Yeah, that would be the big difference between... the first ever time we were introduced to fidelity testing, and now when we're watching Caleb endure a different version of fidelity testing, I assume, would put it that
yes.
way.
So, yes, I would say that the episode title does refer generally to the episode-long storyline of Caleb as he's going through Charloris's fidelity testing, which this is my favorite ever single episode, like, storyline. Because they kind of try to do this every so often where they give us like one kind of mini story that takes up a whole episode, like genre, right?
Sure.
In season two or season three. That was season three. Yeah, because Caleb was in it. Genre where he did the drug and he Rise of Valkyries was playing whatever. And he like goes through all these different genres like film noir and.
It was tight though.
See, the drug ones almost never hit for me.
Oh, that was one of the only ones I remember from season three though.
Yeah, but only because it was drug related.
Yeah.
Those drug things never, ever have ever hit for me once. Like, oh, dude, I bet you the fucking director did drugs to fucking make this episode. He probably did shrooms.
He's tripping balls.
He's tripping balls, man. So this one, by the completely differently, was amazing.
I would say also, just to touch back on fidelity quickly, my only familiarity with that word prior to Westworld was related to, like, infidelity, right?
Ooh.
And yes. Fidelity sort of meaning faithfulness.
Loyalty.
And loyalty.
Yes.
Yeah.
So aside.
The opposite.
Aside from the obvious Caleb Fidelity testing reference, fidelity is also a synonym for loyalty, as Ross so expertly and amazingly has pointed out to all of us.
What a genius.
And we see a lot of instances of loyalty and lack thereof on display this episode. You have Frankie radioing her dad every single day for over 20 years. Like some retired old man with his ham radio.
Yeah.
Trying to become, what was the name of Bryan Cranston in Malcolm in the Middle? He was the dad? He was like the overseas radio guy. He had a ham radio.
I have no idea. I didn't watch enough. I watched Malcolm in the Middle quite a bit, but not enough to like remember specific
episodes. Obviously, Malcolm in the Middle launched Bryan Cranston's career. Frankie Muniz did an interview with Part of My Take recently and was like, yeah, it was so clear from the moment he walked on set when he was an unknown that like the show is built around this guy.
That this guy's a star.
That yeah. this guy's this, and obviously ended up becoming one of the most famous actors in the world. But that was like, nobody knew who he was. He was an unknown, but he always had these crazy, weird storylines. One of them was like back in the 80s, he was like a international waters, like overseas radio, like Tokyo Rose type guy.
Okay.
And the one main thing he says in the episode is like, don't you know that Evian backwards is naive? Yeah. I don't know why I remember that. I used to watch two episodes of Malcolm in the Middle every single day in middle school.
Hal.
Yep. Hal was his name.
Hal was his name.
But he had his radio persona was a different name, which I'll probably never remember. So you have Frankie radioing Caleb every day for over 20 years on their frequency, which, what do you think their frequency was?
I'm trying to find, it was Kid Charlemagne.
Kid Charlemagne.
Yeah, that was his DJ name. It was from a Steely Dan song about an illegal drug chemist.
Yep. Kid Charlemagne, yeah. Bryan Cranston, and Malcolm.
That was from my friend,
GoDaddy.com.
Oogle.
Oh. By the way,
if
you understood that Malcolm Middle reference, you clearly watched as much CW as I did in middle school. They had the show on all the time.
Wasn't a big CW guy. Didn't care for it. But I loved Malcolm in the Middle. Hilarious show.
Great show. Caleb's loyalty to his other build, helping him escape, was another instance of loyalty in this episode. You're the one dude who's like, use me.
It's exactly what I say to you every morning when I bend over in front of you.
It is.
There was a few lines in this one that were, I will say this, well delivered, but nonetheless qualified as, is it cheesies? And use me was definitely one of them. It reminded me of that like half frog mutant creature from Family Guy that goes, kill yep. me.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's, which is basically what he was saying.
And then like, what do you think that would have actually stopped his, like he says, still,
I mean,
splattered.
I thought they did a good job of making it like, it still very clearly hurt Caleb 278, like the one that was trying to escape, yep. or whatever, because that would hurt pretty fucking bad. Still a big fall, but at the same time, I do think you would, enough of your fall would be softened by landing on yourself. That yeah, it was, use me.
He like sticks his arm out, stops him, and said, no. that was funny.
Oh,
undeniably
shit.
Funny.
Yes.
There's also C's loyalty to Jay and her girlfriend and Bernard all being tested. This episode.
A lot of testing.
And then, of course, Bernard's loyalty to Maeve, which Frankie really grills him on, or C, I should say.
She's very, very suspicious of Bernard, and probably, I would say, rightfully so. Bernard did not do a very good job. Look, for somebody who had been through this however many times, he's been through every alternate timeline possible of this happening. He didn't do a great job of, like, his bedside manner is shit.
Yes.
Like, come on, dude, take the time to reassure her of what is occurring here and that you're not a bad guy, because clearly you're suspicious. You're a fucking host. You know you're a host. You know that she's perceiving you as perhaps a host at this point, and yet you allow all this to unfold.
Yeah, confusing.
There was a lot of, like, that in that way, this episode, I mean, also with regard to Caleb's, you know, escape, which was all obviously a setup, yep. by Charlotte Hale the entire time. There was a lot of I forgot my train of thought. What was I saying before that? What was my point before Caleb also went through weird setup? Oh, there was a lot of comparison to like, why would God allow these things to happen?
Yeah.
Like, but it's the a God, an omniscient God would need certain bad things to happen for the end result sort of thing. And that's kind of how it felt watching Bernard allow C to flail in her suspicions.
Yeah.
And also Caleb going through all this shit just to get to the roof and the radio, only to have Charlotte Hale be like, I let you do all this because I needed you to so that this would happen.
Yep.
That was interesting to me.
So as far as the episode description goes, it is, quote, to thine own selves be true. And I read this as just a nice little play on words around the classic phrase, to thine own self be true,
mm-hmm.
which translates into normal person English as be true to yourself, I would say. The play on words here is that if you're undergoing fidelity testing, there are many different versions of yourself. So self in this phrase turns into selves.
Yeah, in this case, 277 prior versions.
Mm-hmm. Now, do they start at... Is one him? I guess it's Bill.
Are you asking if number one is OG human Caleb or is number one the first copy?
Because it's build one, but like, is his human body his first build? Or, you know, like, were they?
I don't think so. I think the first, like, copy number one, because I think the copies are what are numbered. So I think the first build is the first one she created.
Yeah, I would say so.
And then stuck his brain
so
in.
So is he 000?
The human living one?
The one who was human living. 000?
Yeah.
000s?
Yeah.
Now, crackpot theory. There's a computer glitch, and this is a Y2K situation, and when they get to build number 1,000, the world explodes, and all the planes fall out of the sky.
And all your bank account information becomes public and gets emptied.
The Mayans were right.
Yeah. How old were you when that happened? People legitimately thought, like, well, this is it.
I was 7.
Clock's going to strike midnight, and shit's going to hit the fan, and then nothing happened.
Yeah, but, like... Be realistic. It's December 31st, 1999. You have the option to take the red eye home, and it's significantly cheaper, or you can pay $300 more to fly out on January 1st. Are you risking being in the air when the clock strikes midnight?
No,
and your
absolutely
plane falls
not.
Out of the sky.
I mean, the thing about it was I was a kid, so I was probably 14 or whatever, and I didn't have any reason to give a shit. If it happened now... I might even empty my bank account. It's not much in there, so I'd empty it and put it all under the mattress because, like, I don't trust the other humans.
What's the next potential Y2K year? Let's think. So the other one, they said computers were built in the 1900s, so if they got to 2000, it might fuck up. So now, like...
I think we're good now, right?
I mean, in our lifetime, it got to be, right? Like, you'd think everything made now would make it until at least 3000, and, like, we're not living that
I just long. Don't think there's another number that would off... That would fuck... yeah,
2222.
I don't know. I think we're good. We're solid.
Okay.
We're past all that.
Let's start off by discussing the cold open.
Mm.
And I thought it was pretty cool to start off with a timeline I honestly had completely forgotten about, that of young Frankie and Uwade, which we talked about when they ran away after they killed Stryker or whatever the hell that dude's name was.
Stryker.
What was his name?
Is Uwade her mother?
Yeah.
It's Caleb's wife.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Nurse Uwade?
Yes.
Who becomes a fucking... leader in the resistance,
mm-hmm.
but clearly doesn't make it at some point.
Yes, she gets ill. She at least seemingly makes it to old age.
Wait, how do you, what, why?
Because when Bernard was fixing up Maeve's face, C says she used to have to tend to her mother like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, I kind of took that as possibly she was injured in some way, too, maybe, or got sick.
I would say sickness or old age. One of the two.
Well, but because not enough time has passed for her to have reached old age. If Frankie's only 23,
that's a good point.
Then the mother would have been like, what, maximum in her 60s?
Well, Frankie's clearly about 30 because it was like 23 years plus she was like 7.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So yeah.
30 plus. Yeah, you're right. So you'd only be like 60.
So I think either she got sick or there was some kind of attack that she endured that then caused her to eventually pass.
Could have been one of the things we saw, like one of the crazy aberrant events that we see Rehoboam predict, potentially.
Yeah.
That would be interesting. So was really interested to go to this storyline. Like, after they ran away, like, I was like, oh yeah, we talked. We're like, oh, this is going to be a new storyline. And like, we forgot. And really it wasn't, it was just a cold open technique. Like,
it was still cool though.
I liked it.
More of like where Frankie started. Also, this was them pulling in,
Jay,
who inevitably betrays her in this episode.
Post,
I don't even know
post
if could...
Jay betrays her.
Yeah.
Jay gets...
We don't know. I'm going to say this. We didn't see JJ die.
Wah.
They like both draw on each other, and clearly the host Jay gets a shot off. But like, I'm just saying, they left some suspicion there or some doubt there in terms of whether or not we're ever going to see him again.
True,
because it felt like they were making him a pretty central character, like an important guy. I don't know. I also wouldn't be surprised if we never see him again, especially considering we only have two fucking episodes left.
You bring up a good point. He was in the trailer,
right?
Like they featured him in the trailer, like, oh, this is a new actor this season.
Well, but
like,
and then the cold open focus to me, outside of the fact that we obviously find out Uwate and Frankie were actively like starting the resistance together, it seemed like a lot. Like the whole thing was he was the focus for me. Like, this guy that they find is one of the outliers, that this is one of the first people they pull, and then later he's going to be one of the leaders of the outliers, right? He seemed like the dude in charge.
Yeah, he did.
Of Frankie's whole squad.
Yes, I agree.
So, I don't know. That seemed like an important character.
Yeah, so like you said, we learned that Frankie and Uwate played a crucial role in the creation of the human resistance against the host-controlled world and actually recruited Jay. Now, I will say, the resistance looks like it's the same size now in the present timeline as it was back then when they recruited Jay.
Yeah, they haven't made a ton of progress or strategy changes, I might add. They're still just running into the city and like grabbing people.
Yeah, you got to get those numbers up.
Yeah.
And they're still like they did a 1-for-1 swap. They keep doing this.
Yeah.
They lost that one dude, Blinky McGee. They lost Blinky Magoo. Fucking Blinks gets chokeholded.
Yeah.
Do you think when he said like no, stop, like the droid's like, oh, you're right, man. My bad.
I thought the fly was going to like infect him or whatever.
I did too.
Or that he was going to be like, oh no, the fly is going to infect me and slap it. But instead, it's a simple blink. You can't even blink?
Can't even blink.
Come on. And then, that was kind of one of the sillier moments in the episode to me, just to pick nits, because he blinks and then Uwate is like, run!
Well, yeah, I think there was...
Why didn't you just fucking run from the get-go, lady? What the hell was that?
Well, I think... the reason why, and this I've thought about this, is because they're like, well, that dude's fucking dead, and that guy will be preoccupied for a while, so now we have free room.
Well, like, it's a lion, like, that droid is going to stop and eat him or something before it can go and continue attacking? I don't know. I just kind of assumed those all-white droid dudes are super fast.
They always walk pretty slow.
And it turns out, not the best fighters, either. No. Like, Aaron Paul's not a huge dude, and he beat the shit out of that one and stabbed its face 1,000 times.
Yes.
So.
Yes, he did.
I thought those things were way more badass than we found out they are in this episode. They just look really scary.
They do, yeah, they do. Yeah, we also learned that Frankie radios Caleb on their frequency every single day without fail, which really sets us up for the dramatic C and Caleb reunion we are clearly going to get.
You would think so.
There's no, right? The way they have set up Frankie's character, in my opinion, is solely for the Caleb reunion.
So, okay, so then in your mind, there is no doubt that Caleb's character and Caleb 279, as it were, the one we see being created at the end of the episode, will have a further role in the show.
Yeah,
because you could easily cut Caleb's storyline right here.
No, the reason why they show her building another one, I think, along with showing her struggle to like get the answer she's looking for and her struggle to like solve her outlier problem, is to say, Caleb is fucking back. He's not dead. He's coming back. Of course, she's obsessed.
Yeah, but how does he get out of that? I mean, I don't think it's just a weird situation.
I think the resistance finds a way.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. But also, I would just say Charlotte Hale seems pretty resigned to herself at this point, like, and to her fate. To just continue, even after all that, even after she gets him on the roof, gets him to use the radio, all that, she makes another one. Like, she's out of ideas. She's just doing this and hoping maybe something will fucking happen. She's clearly at a loss.
I mean, I think the way I see it, what she finally accomplished was getting him to radio Frankie, thinking he was escaping.
Right.
And that's what she's been doing all this for. Now, you could argue, she could have done a lot of things to make him radio Frankie earlier. Maybe build a fucking ladder down from the air vent. That's three earlier right there. Maybe make the droid not come and attack him.
Dude, so many easier ways to do. How about you send a droid into his cell with a radio that and then tell the droid, like, hey, don't pay enough attention and let him kill you so that he has a radio and can use it.
Yep.
Or just put a radio in there.
Yeah.
If he wakes up in there, like he does in all those rooms, and sees a fucking radio, he's probably just going to go for it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So
it was still fun.
I
admittedly, one of the most fun.
Yes.
That storyline alone, watching a whole bunch of Calebs in different versions of functionality attempt to escape was some of the most fun I've ever had watching this show. I loved that. It was very, very, it was very Rick and Morty, yeah. I would add. Like, yeah. straight up Rick and Morty, which Rick and Morty draws from a lot of classic sci-fi stuff.
Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
Rick and Morty.
Which is cool, because you just see, I mean, there was a lot of element, that whole radioing every day thing, that's not like a concept they invented. That's like something that was from other TV shows or movies I can remember in the past. Not specifically, I can't put my finger on it, but like, that's one of the things they've done such a good job with this season, is drawing from all these different like sci-fi themes and narratives and then kind of combining them in a really great way.
Yeah, I agree. So how do you think the reunion between C and Caleb is going to go?
Man, that question becomes like, what do you think C and Maeve are going to do next? And I mean, I really don't know. I think you're on the right track with the Resistance has to free him, because it's not going to be him busting out. All right, Charlotte Hale has that place locked the fuck down. And also, I would note, we questioned last week a lot of like, why is Charlotte Hale just allowing Christina, who was not in this episode, to wander around and check out all these important things and find out all this information? And is she letting her do that? And I think after seeing what she's letting Caleb do in this episode, that Christina's in a similar boat where, like you theorized, that this was all about her trying to get Christina to give her the information about the Valley Beyond. And I think you're spot on there, too. It's just that's a little stupid to me because, again, not the best strategy from Hale. Like, she doesn't seem to really have a good grip on what she's doing anymore.
Yeah, and I think she knows that. She's clearly, like, bleeding and, like, kind of...
Yeah, what'd you think about her standing on the edge of that building?
I think it was her kind of coming to grips with, like, her whole, like, situation.
I thought that bitch was going to jump.
I knew she wouldn't. There's no... It's two episodes left, right?
Yeah, but this show's insane.
That's true.
So I was just like, oh my God, is she about to give up and just leave? Which also would have been like a very interesting God parallel, because there are people who say like, you know, God left this place a long time ago. He came and checked in, or she came and checked in and was like, well, that planet's fucked, and then bounced.
Isn't that a Spy Kids 3 quote? Or Spy Kids quote?
That God stays in heaven out of fear of what he has created, delivered by Steve Buscemi. Darkest line in the history of children's movies.
Which Spy Kids is that from?
I think it's like the second or third one, too, which kind of makes it even funnier. It's like in the sequel or the trilogy. Yeah. Good stuff.
Tony Shalhoub, great in Spy Kids 1.
I don't think I've even seen a Spy
Kids film.
Fun
fact, Daryl Sabara, who plays Junie in Spy Kids, married to Megan Trainor of All About That Bass, No Trouble.
No shit.
Yeah, there's a really weird picture, a really weird paparazzi photo of them walking out of a sex shop together. It's not good.
Yeah, the quote is, do you think God lives in heaven because he... No, do you think God stays in heaven because he too lives in fear of what he's created? And he delivers it like looking at the camera and shit. Like, it's... What a horrifying thing to write into a kid's movie. That probably scarred a lot of kids.
It probably did. Clearly you.
Yeah.
Let's stay chronological here and move on to discussing the old Frankie, a.k.a. C and Bernard storyline this episode. In order to have the means to wake Maeve up, they head to the abandoned 1920s theme park. Did you like this return?
When they showed
in the cold open, them like go and look at it, I thought it was just like a Resistance city. I did not even recognize that as a 1920s park until they get in there.
It really didn't matter all that much. I mean, it wasn't the storyline I was the most enthralled by. Watching Bernard and at one point Bernard says like, you know, he's like, hey, one of these people is going to betray you, but unfortunately, it's a different person every time. Sometimes it's your girlfriend. Sometimes it's Jay. Hell, sometimes it's even Stubbs.
Yeah.
And Stubbs is like, what the fuck? Don't look at me. Was he joking?
No, I think he was serious, but like trying to...
How the fuck would it be Stubbs sometimes?
Because maybe...
Oh, because somehow Stubbs gets taken out and a copy of him gets put in. So it's just whoever gets replaced by a host.
That or... maybe when, cause Stubbs left with Jay for a while and maybe like, I don't know.
Something could have happened. Yeah. Anyway,
when he was inside Charloris could have found him inside the park and then replaced him
with one that was evil.
Evil. That's what
Stubbs.
I think. So I did enjoy this return. My favorite part of it though came when Bernard was revitalizing Maeve, and my favorite Westworld song of all time, which I don't know if anybody even remembers this song from season one. It's called Dr. Ford. It was played when he was like revitalizing Maeve and bringing her back to life. It's the one that goes, It's such a fucking good song, and I think it's the first time they've played it since season one. That's my song. Like, if I'm trying to grind out work, I'll put that song on repeat and listen to it for like an hour straight. I freaking love that song. It's on Spotify. Dr. Ford.
All right, Dr. Ford. I thought that was, I mean, I didn't realize that, but that is a cool sort of callback to remind you, because there were multiple moments in this episode that referenced season one. Bernard says, like, you remember Westworld? This thing is designed just exactly like that. And she's like, why would I give a fuck? And he's like, I used to work there. There's like a bunch of references to the origins of all this. And so it's cool that they would give a little Dr. Ford song callback in there while he's doing something that Dr. Ford did many, many times. We watched him put Maeve back together in that cold storage back room where he used to hang out with that fucking dude who's
old Bill
talking about the lady with the
white shoes, Maya.
White shoes.
A lot of people are reaching out to us going, remember old Bill? Cheers to the lady with the white shoes. Maya wears white shoes in episode one when Dolores or Christina picks her shoes for her.
Wow.
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 White shoes.
So we learn.
You know who else wore white shoes?
Michael Jackson.
Daniel. Damn, Daniel. Back at it again with the white Vans.
Yours is way less problematic than mine.
Yeah.
Michael Jackson definitely wore white shoes, right?
Yeah. Well, the shoes weren't problematic. It was actions.
And I want to say right now, the shoes weren't. We do not cheers to the man in the white shoes, Michael Jackson, on this podcast.
I don't. I'm not an MJ guy.
A lot
anymore,
of people
I'm
do.
Sorry.
It would shock you. It would shock some people to find out the amount of people out there who still cheers to the man in the white shoes, Michael Jackson.
Wouldn't shock me. Wouldn't shock me. People are weird. It's hard to let go of your fallen idols. I understand. I'm a Kanye West fan.
And Chris D'Elia.
No, not so much anymore. I did love him, though.
Yes. So we learn that Charloris's park no longer used hats to collect guest data and instead used scanners hidden in mirrors, which, now I get that can contain much more advanced technology. It's huge. It doesn't have to fit in a hat. Behind a mirror, it's got a scanner, and the technology is 20 years newer. But I feel like having a brain scanner attached to your head would be way better in any scenario than having a body scanner.
Yeah, okay, but the problem being, what if somebody doesn't want to wear a hat? What if they're taking the hat off? The hat thing was always a little bit weird in terms of like, okay, so they have to put the hat on, and then the hat is the thing that's scanning their freaking brains. So I like that they did this update and they gave it a little explanation as to why this was the way it worked now, and the mirror thing was fairly cool. I thought they were like, all right, we need to update this. We need it to be something different than the hats, and we need to make it deep. And they tried to make it like, and this plays off of humanity's
vanity.
Because you can't stop looking at yourself in the mirror, and you would never suspect the mirror. And I'm like, yeah, except for all of the times in movies and shit that mirrors are used to hide like a hidden compartment, or like you take a mirror off the wall and there's a safe behind it. Like, I wouldn't be any less suspicious of a fucking mirror than I would be anything else in that weird-ass park.
I don't look at myself in mirrors very often.
Also, vampires don't look at themselves in mirrors. How are you going to get vampire data?
Honestly, if we ever...
She didn't think of that shit.
If we ever make it to a Westworld panel, which I was supposed to be at one, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
Back when they were here in Austin.
We finally got invited to something. Or got approved to go to something.
Yeah, and then I had a COVID exposure, unfortunately.
But. Yeah.
So, but
it happens.
We're going to ask them, hey, what was Charloris' plan to get vampire data in the park?
Yeah.
Because the mirrors don't work.
And they'll go.
But a hat would have.
And they'll go, get out.
No, they won't even say get out. They'll look away. Security will escort us out.
And then they'll write that shit into the next season because they'll be irate that we fucking brought it up.
It's going to be the True Blood / Westworld crossover.
That would be sick.
They're going to make billions of dollars off this franchise. What's it called? West Transylvania.
West Blood. I don't know.
West Blood?
West Transylvania.
In West Transylvania, born and raised.
Yeah. All right, where are we?
Okay. So, C gets a little suspicious of Bernard's intentions after interrogating him, eventually outs him as a host. Now, why do we think she decided to do that? Just because Jay said there was a mole, or was she getting suspicious of him throughout her interrogation of him?
I think there's like a 20-minute, well, I don't know how long, you know, several scenes between the two where you can see her like slowly being like, wait a minute, is this all your fault?
Or yeah, are you what's this in guy's on this fucking like, deal?
Why are you so informed and you're not explaining it to me, which frankly is, no pun intended, is exactly how I would have behaved if I was in her shoes. Like, this guy seems like it's, the odds are better that he is actually evil, especially because she discovers him trying to copy all of their data so that and then he's just like, you're going to have to trust me. It's like, no, you're going to have to explain yourself, old man, because you're trying to copy all of us. And that's exactly what we're trying to prevent from happening to the whole world of all of humans. And you're now just doing it to us and saying you're on our team? What the fuck?
Yeah, when he scans her and then just takes the memory card out, I'm like, if somebody did it to me, if somebody scanned my body and took the memory card and pocketed it, I'd be like, What are you
that was
with
him
that?
Putting literally her in his pocket. I would be upset too.
He's got C in his pocket and the other hand. How's that song go?
I don't know. Don't throw me under the bus.
You don't
bus.
Know that song? Who? It's I got one hand in my pocket
and the other one's in my hand.
So you
I can't remember the words though.
Okay. The song is called Hand in My Pocket by Alanis Morissette.
Ah, Alanis Morissette's classic album.
Is it from that album?
I don't know. I think that's the only one she ever made that people paid attention to.
Okay, because I've got one hand in my pocket. Ooh, this is a good lyric.
Was it from Jagged Little Pill? That's the classic.
Okay, there's two times when Alanis Morissette has a hand in her pocket. The first time, she says, because I've got one hand in my pocket, and the other one is flicking a cigarette, that's sick. That's cool.
What is the name of that song?
Hand in My Pocket.
Oh.
And then the second time.
It is on Jagged Little Pill.
Oh. And then the second time, she says, because I've got one hand in my pocket and the other one is hailing a taxi cab.
Hailing a taxi cab. Good shit from Canadian singer Alanis Morissette, who released Jagged Little Pill on June 13th, 1995.
Yes.
Track 4, Hand in My Pocket. You could check it out on Spotify.
But C still trusts Bernard enough to entertain his simulation knowledge, which leads C to believe there's a mole in their ranks that's not him. Could be Stubbs.
Could be anyone but him, which I think was another one of the things that was like, she was like, eh.
It's anybody but you and me. Okay. It's like the classic, like, hey, it's actually what Jay did. It's the classic, like, you're the only one I can trust right now.
Yes, which makes immediately when we're watching that scene unfold, we're like, oh, it's Jay.
Yeah.
I was like, this is your mole right here. Shoot this motherfucker in the face, please. But she took a while.
And I guess shooting him in the face may not even have done anything because he'd be stabbed in the head. Kill Bill style. But
I mean, she didn't even shoot him in the head, though. No. Like, what was she just giving him body shots? Like, that's going to do anything.
She shoots Bernard, knowing it wouldn't kill him or impact him. And then she shoots Jay, thinking it would.
And here's the thing. If you're going to pop somebody and you don't want to do a headshot, understandable. If you hit him in the chest twice and they're unfazed, now you have no choice.
No, you got to shoot him in the dick like Maeve did in episode one.
Don't use all six bullets on the chest and body and then let the gun go click, and then you're surprised that this didn't, like, the first couple didn't do anything. What were you doing?
Maeve literally shot the state senator host in the dick in episode one, and that worked.
Shoot him in the dick.
You gotta shoot him in the dick.
It's always a move.
I figured it would be Jay, the second Bernard said it's sometimes Jay, because of the cold open. Like, why?
Right. I thought that made it pretty, but they did a good job of making her girlfriend seem suspicious, too,
yes,
and then she, like,
did.
Locks her in a room and tells her she'll be safe, which was a good strategy, I would add, by C. Because she didn't know, and if she is the mole, well, now she's taking care of that and locked her in a room, although it seems like it'd be easy to break down a door if you were a host, but that's neither here nor there. The other point being, if she's not the mole, she does want to keep her safe, right?
Yes.
She clearly cares a lot about her girlfriend.
Now, it would have been pretty funny if C was convinced that it was the new outlier, Lindsay, and just killed her. she gets this crazy escape from the park. They travel all the way to the condemned lands from New York.
And she's dead.
She's like, fuck.
Yeah.
Couldn't win. So C figures out it's Jay because he's way too optimistic about Caleb being alive and because he wouldn't refer to himself as C's sibling, as we learned in the cold open. And luckily, Caleb's radio message, do you think it served as a little bit of a distraction that let her to be able to run and go get the gun?
I think it was more like motivation and reassurance to her almost, because here's one of the things about his message that I found interesting. He seems pretty fucking confident that Charlotte Hale is going to lose and that Frankie is going to win.
Yes.
I think he has a reason that he believes that. I don't know if he's achieved some level of Bernard future telling abilities or what, but the fact that there have been 278 versions of him through this episode, and that he's like that confident in delivering this message to his daughter, it makes me think perhaps he has somehow become privy to future knowledge as a result of all this fidelity testing, his not being human anymore. I don't really know. It just seemed like there was maybe something there.
Well, he also, he has a secret. He's not telling Charlotte Hale, which maybe that secret that he has about how he's able, what he has.
Do you think he really has a secret? Or that the secret is that humanity cannot be snuffed out as simply as Charlotte Hale would like to think it can be? That if you copy humanity and stick it into a host, that it still remains in some form beneath the surface, sort of. I'm having a hard time believing that at some point we're going to find out that that Caleb has some secret that he knows about himself that does make him different. Because that's what she's been trying to figure out this whole time and has come up with nothing.
I do think, though, that he has an answer. I don't know how satisfying the answer is going to be to us, the viewer.
That's what I'm worried about.
But I know that he has an answer that has convinced him that Frankie's going to win and Charlotte Hale is going to lose.
Well, okay, do you remember when all this started with Caleb? And Dolores picked him, hand-picked him out of every living human and told him it was because there was something special about him, and we never find out what that is?
We did.
Somebody
pointed this out. It was when he was at war, and they were, like, gonna rape that.
Him and Kid Cudi?
Yeah, and they were, no, I don't know if he was with Kid Cudi at the time, but weren't they, like, gonna, his, like, fellow soldiers were trying to, like, rape somebody?
They were gonna do an
and
assault.
And he, like, stopped him? And she was able to see that.
Not a single other living human had ever committed a good deed in their entire fucking lives, is what we're supposed to believe.
And the outlier thing, maybe.
Well, and also, it's just odd that if Dolores had the ability to see what made Caleb special, why the hell would Charlotte Hale not have that ability?
I don't know.
It's just odd. That whole piece of the storyline is the thing that I'm like, I don't know how y'all are going to wrap this up well, but I'm really rooting for you.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't fully make sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, because... I'm trying to think. So Jay shoots the radio to like stop the message. She didn't even hear all of it.
Just the beginning, which is fucked because she waited like 25 years or whatever to hear that.
Yeah, he did.
I think that's the other piece of it. She's so pissed off that this dude just shot the message that it's like motivating to crawl and get the gun. Also, I would more than anything blame Jay's host for being a fucking idiot and allowing her to go get the gun.
Yeah, but it looks so. Jay's whole thing was that he knew. That he couldn't be shot to death, so even if she got the gun, he just wanted
care.
To get he wanted her to tell him where the control unit was. That's his motivation. He needed that. That was he was directed by Char Loris to find Maeve's control unit. Which I will note, if you're Jay, you don't know where the control unit is. He got too cocky because all he's really got to do is just steal the body, right?
Then you leave room for them to make another body,
I guess,
perhaps?
I guess the only reason they wanted the body was because the control unit was in it. So I guess that makes sense. You're right.
Yeah.
Because they could just remake the body, I guess. But yeah, so he was directed, like, don't come back without the control unit, which is why he wouldn't kill her because she's the only one who knew where it was because she hid it. Now, something interesting to me.
But she hid it in Maeve's head.
Yeah. So we knew that Bernard had hit it in the piano. That's where we all thought it was.
Right.
But at some point.
She got in there.
She got into the piano because she knew where it was. It had to be her because Bernard was strapped to a chair.
Yeah.
And she put it in Maeve's head. She must have done that when she was waiting in the saloon. When Jay walked in, after she knew it was him, she must have already put it in Maeve then and was like waiting for it to load or whatever.
Yes. And fortunately, it loaded in time.
Just in time for Maeve to stab that man in the head.
Yeah, I think like one of the things I questioned here was, did Caleb's message somehow awaken Maeve, right? Like she was able to hear Caleb's voice. And that was, I mean, clearly the reason she came and found them so quickly is because that was my idea anyway.
Wait, okay, crackpot theory.
Yep.
You've inspired.
Hmm.
We know that there's a certain radio frequency in episode one that Maeve uses to talk to Caleb. What if that radio frequency is the exact same one that Caleb told Frankie to contact him on? That's his one that goes into his fucking limbic system that was attached to him. What if that is his limbic system frequency that he both talks to Maeve through, is connected to her with, and Frankie?
That would make sense. I mean, Maeve got there quick, fast after message. Yeah,
right after the message. Yeah. I think that's it. I think you solved that. Well, I made it into a theory, but
you solved it by smoking crack. So. Your crackpot theory.
I really do think that that's what happened. I think the radio message woke Maeve up.
That was my read on the whole thing.
Yes, that was great. Great
job. Loading happened way faster as a result.
This episode of Freeze All Motor Functions is brought to you by the amazing folks at Felix Gray Glasses. I'm wearing them on my face right freaking now, baby. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see them. The good folks at Felix Gray create effective, research-backed products to improve humans' relationships with technology, making them a perfect sponsor for our Westworld podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It all started 5 years ago when Felix Gray set out to create eyewear that would make it easier and more comfortable for humans to stare at screens. Why? Because whether you like it or not, we all live in a digital world now. And living in a digital world means we are forced to look at screens, screens, and more screens all day, every day. And the thing about these screens, Ross, is that they are wreaking havoc on our eyeballs and brains and causing things like eye strain, headaches, and blurry vision. And the blue light emitted from these screens is the culprit. And Felix Gray's clear blue light lenses filter 15 times more blue light than other clear lenses. 9 out of 10 customers experience relief from eye strain, headaches, and or blurry vision. Ross, you wear these things all the time.
I do.
How are your eyeballs?
Yeah, you can think of the blue light as like the sound that's emitted from those cones in Westworld, and if somebody offered you earbuds, you would definitely take them to protect your ears so that you couldn't be controlled by that bullshit. Same with the blue light, man. It's coming out of the screens, whether you like it or not, and I'm on screens all day, every day for my job, whether it be the laptop or the cell phone or the desktop computer, and then when I'm done with work, guess what I like to do to relax? Watch TV, which involves another bigger screen with even more blue light coming out of it. Also, I wear contacts and glasses since I was like 12 years old, and my eyes get worn out by the end of the day. They're itchy. I get headaches, blurry vision. Felix Gray takes care of all of that, protecting your eyes from the screens that we use. They're amazing. I've been wearing them for a few years now. I love the Faraday frames, the Nash.
I'm a Kepler guy. That's what I'm wearing right now. I also have the Hamilton.
They've got great sunglasses as well. I just put some on my face, and they're amazing. Felix Gray is awesome. We appreciate their sponsorship and perfect for our show.
And they have both non-prescription glasses and prescription glasses available, so they truly are for anyone and everyone. Check out Felix Gray's full selection at felixgrayglasses.com/FAMF, F-A-M-F, FAMF,
FAMF,
where you'll have access to free shipping, free returns, and free exchanges. Try it out. It's risk-free.
Got nothing to lose.
FelixGrayGlasses.com/FAMF, FAMF.
They got a pair for everybody. They got nighttime glasses before you go to sleep. They got everything.
Check them out. Support the show as well.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, let's check in with Charloris and Caleb. So something to note.
Yes, please.
Last episode, we got Charloris, but we did not get Caleb. We did not get Bernard. We did not get C.
Right.
And we did get Christina. So, like, we really, aside from Charloris, last episode and this episode, in Stubbs. Charloris and Stubbs, I think, are the only crossover characters from last episode.
Interesting decisions by the showrunners to kind of include and exclude certain characters in certain episodes.
And Lindsay.
They obviously have a lot to cover.
And Jay. Okay, I'm thinking of more now.
They obviously have a lot to cover in terms of all of the storylines that they've spun up, and not everybody can be in every episode, but it was curious to see the sort of mixing and matching that went on this week compared to last.
So no Christina this week. We get Maeve back. No Teddy Flood, obviously. Yeah. So they're not trying to overload the episodes by sticking all the characters in it.
Which I can really appreciate. I think that's one of the mistakes they made in the past by trying to jump back and forth and get caught up and updated on every single little fucking thing. And this gives us sort of a more focused episode each week where we're only dealing with a couple different storylines, sometimes three. And I guess it was a little more confusing earlier in the year when we were like, when is now that we're watching?
Yes.
But now that we've sort of gotten some clarity around that, it's become the easiest season of Westworld to follow. And I mean this in a good way, not a bad way, since season one, where throughout season one, you could follow the show. It was definitely confusing and you didn't really know what was happening, but you could follow the show enough to start making guesses about what could be occurring. And that was the sweet spot. That's where you want to be. Like, don't make us feel so fucking stupid that we don't know what's going on. Like, in season two and season three, we know you're smarter than us. You don't have to prove it every week. Give us a show that we can follow somewhat and is very enjoyable with all these sci-fi elements. And that's what they've done. We're right back on track. And through six, I will just to throw it out in the middle here. This has been a no skips season, which is really hard to do. Usually in the middle, you have a couple few episodes that are like filler or sort of plot pushing, but there's no excitement or drama. And I mean, that applies to some of the great shows in history, whether it be The Sopranos, Game of Thrones. Like, you get to the middle of the season, it's usually pretty dead because they're saving the big moments for either the beginning to get you locked in or the very end to get you very stoked to talk about the show and then come back next season. They have had moments in every episode every week that have made me be like, God damn, that was a really fucking cool episode.
And I think moving to 8 episodes from 10 is part of that.
And I have a lot to say about that at the end of today's pod in terms of how much room we have left to finish all this up.
So we learned that Charloris is so obsessed with Caleb because before human Caleb died IRL, he used his outlier powers to disobey her commands. And this was actually, to me, an amazing tie-in that makes total sense because, of course, Charloris, having an outlier problem, would try and use Caleb, a proven outlier in multiple different systems, who claimed to know why he was an outlier, to solve her outlier problem.
See, but I think he's full of shit. I don't think he knows why he's an outlier. I think he likes jacking with her, because why wouldn't you? I did think this was... That moment we see Caleb, human Caleb, die, right? He's been set up in that hole or whatever. The Maeve and Black Man in Black fight happens outside, and then the helicopter shows up and he gets informed that's actually not his people. He's about to be murdered. That was a little bit of a disappointment to me in terms of story progression, and now it's really tied back in a way that makes sense and just gives it more weight. Like, there was a reason he died. This is what's happening next. This is why it was important to Charlotte Hale to kind of keep him around in host form and continue testing him, because she is full-blown sold that this dude's brain has the answers to her problems.
And like I said, my guess is that whatever Caleb's secret is that Charlotte is trying to get, she will hear it eventually before she dies. She'll hear what it is, and I think she will not... I think it's going to be something that she will not be able to do anything about anyways, like you said. I think it'll be humanity is incapable of being controlled. So no matter... Even if she knew that information, it's not going to help her. That's my guess.
It's going to be interesting. She has that line in this episode. She's like, these fucking humans with their little whatever pushbacks, whatever she said.
It's like so tiring. These like little things.
They keep not doing what I want them to do, and that everything they do is so small, right? That it's not unimportant and stupid. Like him escaping or whatever. All the different things that go on. She's just annoyed by them.
If she saw a human spending 2 hours flipping a water bottle to try to get it land right side up, she would be so confused.
She'd lose her goddamn mind.
What the fuck are you doing? Yeah. That's no point to that. That's so why do you do these little things? Because we want to.
Yeah. Well, we pass the time.
Pass the time. So,
which she doesn't get. She doesn't know how to have fun.
No. What I'm wondering is, instead of trying to get Caleb to spill the beans via some escape from her fidelity testing, which clearly is taking her a long time to like actually make happen, again, partly because of her own idea that it has to be done in a certain way, maybe she has
She's at a loss, man.
Yeah. But either way, what if instead of doing that, why would she not just keep running simulations of the scene where he disobeyed her until he finally told her why? Like,
I kind of get the impression she might have done that already.
You
know what I mean?
Yeah, it's possible.
She's been at this for long.
It's possible that, because what we saw was clearly not the first time that had happened.
Let me ask you this. When we're seeing this unfold, Caleb 1 through 278. Did you have a feeling of sorrow for his soul?
Who will save your soul?
That's what they want you to feel. Like, you're supposed to feel like, oh my God, his soul is trapped in eternal suffering. Like, his consciousness is being tortured over and over and over and over. That doesn't really hit for me, because I'm like, I don't know. Once you're human... body is dead and gone, does a resurrected AI version of you feel in the same way that the human did? And it's tough for me to carry that over.
Yeah.
I don't think I get the full effect of what they want me to get, which is like, you're supposed to be like, my God, this is hell. It's the worst case scenario that you're having to be woken up over and over and over and over, only to fail, only to find out your daughter's still alive and that you're going to die in a couple hours. Like, I get it, but at the same time, I was like, yeah, I don't know, it's a host. It's a host. If that was a human, straight up human, in a human body, with human blood and shit, that would suck. But it's a fucking robot version of him. Like, that's the question, though, right? Does AI feel the way that human beings do? Like, if I go beat the shit out of my computer with a baseball bat, I don't care. I don't feel bad. I don't think it does either.
Like, was it Office Space?
But if you give it consciousness, is it the same? Is that humanity? And I think the answer they're giving us is, fuck no. Which is why I don't feel all that bad for all these fake copies of Caleb. Because fuck, who gives a shit?
But I did root so hard for Caleb to escape.
Oh, man.
Using all those clues. I was like, yeah, all the old versions of him are helping him out. Yeah.
Dude.
And then I'm kind of like, this is probably a setup.
Exactly where I was at. The handprint one was the one that made me go, oh, okay.
You're not washing that off?
Come on. No one is picking up the bodies. No one is cleaning off the handprint.
The dead droid who's like, what?
It became pretty obvious that he was probably being set up. But even through that, I was rooting so hard for dude to make it. And I thought he was going to give up in that vent when he almost just jumps. What the how the fuck do you look down at two dead versions of yourself and go, well, I've got no other options. Thank God that half-alive version of him was like, stop, dumbass.
Use my holes. So, Charloris waited all this time for Caleb to maybe tell Frankie some secret over the radio, and he did not, which pissed her off, and she kung fu grips him.
Gosh! She does the old neck snap on him and then almost throws herself off the fucking roof.
And in the end, after this trial failed, Charloris seemingly went right back to the grindstone, and we learned she's now on Caleb build 279. What is her endgame with these builds? She needs to find a new thing now. This one clearly didn't work. So I presume in the next couple episodes, we're going to see her try some new shit.
What is interesting to me is, all right, no Man in Black in this one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you're right, because he ran away to go see the human Man in Black.
What in the hell is going on there? I mean, obviously, I think we get that next week, but it is crazy to me that that dude was just not around, and she's off Caleb infidelity testing over and over and over and over and over. My point is almost this. She doesn't have anyone left.
Yeah.
Like, the Man in Black has failed her. He can't take care of the problem, right? She yells at him last, why the fuck can't you fix my virus problem? What are they called? Outlier problem. Why can't you fix my outlier problem? And this week he's not around. And Caleb is kind of her only move. Like, it's maybe even not that necessarily she thinks she'll solve it for real. It's just the only thing she's got left. Like, he's kind of the only person that she even finds interesting enough to attempt to connect with, right? So you feel bad. This is the first time that you feel a little bit bad for Charlotte Hale. Like, this whole thing is a massive failure. She's standing up there on the roof with a wrecked left arm, bleeding all over herself. And does she look in control to you?
No.
Does she look happy to you?
No.
This entire thing is a goddamn failure. It's a whole fucking waste of time. And she's only gotten more miserable as a result. There's no, like, nothing good has come of this. She's basically proven to herself that existence is pointless.
Which is funny because you could look at, in season one, you could look at Dr. Ford having been in her exact situation. But he was like, fuck yeah. Let the fucking host become sentient, where she is trying to actively prevent it, and it's really stressing her out. Dr. Ford was like all about it. That's a pretty interesting parallel.
Yes. There's no lack of parallels between season one and this one. It's one of the things that's made this season so freaking good, is that they clearly went back to season one and went, okay, what worked?
Yeah.
What was great about this? Because people loved it, and they've hated everything since. And then they replicated that, almost mirrored it, ironically enough, and it's phenomenal. It's awesome.
Ross, so we have two episodes left. Thoughts?
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I don't know how they wrap this up. That's the one really negative thought that entered my mind when this episode ended, was like, wait, you're telling me that in the next 2 hours, you're going to wrap a bow, you're going to put a pretty bow on this whole fucking shitstorm that you've shown us unfold? I'm almost hoping that they do not close out this, what they started this season, by the end of it. I hope that they give us a piece of closure. Maybe one piece of this gets closed, but I almost want next season to proceed down the path they've already created. Because if you're talking about closing out Charlotte Hale and what she's doing, with all the fidelity testing and running the whole world and having everybody listen to tones that make them, the glorious tones that make them do whatever the fuck she wants, the Man in Black clone, who's now reconnecting with the human Man in Black and probably going to free him in some regard. C, who is obviously going to need to reconnect with her father in some way. And in order for that to happen, I assume the rebellion has to be successful, which means the whole rebellion has to be successful.
They have Maeve.
But they do have Maeve. But so that whole battle has to unfold. Bernard has to unfold. All of that has to be finished out too. There's just, I guess that's kind of all of it. Never mind. I'm confident they can do that. Is that it? Am I forgetting any storyline that they have to wrap?
Christina.
Oh, fuck. Okay, so then that's the last one that really makes me not confident okay. that they can do all that. That's a lot, man.
Here's my prediction. And this is like, I'm coming up with this on the spot, so I'm sure I'm going to forget some stuff. Okay, I'm basing all of this on the fact that we see in the trailer very clearly, and they don't try to hide it, it's very obvious that the Sublime Rift opens over the dam. So the Sublime becomes open at some point.
Like, when are they going to get to that?
I think the way that happens is that we find out that Christina has been under Charloris's control the whole time, and that Charloris has been building Christina up to become Dolores so she can take the data, the encryption, whatever, out of Dolores' head to open the Sublime. So I think Christina's whole storyline ends in that she's been a pawn this whole time for Charloris to open up the Sublime.
But you think it's going to work, though?
Well, I do think it's going to work, and the Sublime will be open because Charloris is going to... So that will be some success she has, my guess. But we also see that the dam is, like, in the desert, right? We know that's where the rebellion kind of is near, at least, like, that part of the country.
There seems to be a lot of desert out there, too, yeah.
So I think then Maeve comes in, but then what about Teddy? What the fuck is Teddy fitting here?
There's too many people. I'm not going to sit here and make myself into a doubter, because they've proven without a shadow of a doubt that they've got their shit together this season.
This season, yes. But they've also proven...
Yeah, but it's hard for me to believe they would have built up all this goodwill and all this great storytelling and these six great episodes we've watched so far just for them to fall flat on their face in the end.
Yeah.
And I say this in part because of something I've told you off mic. When I watched the after-the-episode scenes with Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy, they are cocky. Like, they are... they seem to have full confidence that they just crushed this entire thing. Like... they have an air of we did it to them that I don't think they would have if they kind of flailed at the end of the season.
Do you think Benioff and Weiss had that, though, in there after the episodes?
Oh, I'm 100% certain that they had a feeling that they were going to be in deep trouble. The second that they got past the source material and it was on them and the rift had been created between them and George R.R. Martin already, so he was kind of like fucked off and not helping them anymore, I think they were completely screwed, and that probably fed into the issues that we saw in the final seasons of Thrones because they were not confident.
Speaking of Thrones...
Those guys were jackasses, by the way.
House of the Dragon comes out shortly. If you like Westworld, you probably like Game of Thrones too because you're an HBO person. And Ross, on his Game of Thrones podcast that he does with Barrett Dudley, just broke down the trailer.
It's true. We got an official trailer finally. It's 2 minutes and 30 seconds of what we're going to see in House of the Dragon. It's like the most complete look into sort of what these stories are going to entail.
And if you're not familiar, House of the Dragon is a Game of Thrones prequel.
It's the first Game of Thrones spinoff to actually make it to the screen. And it is a prequel, takes place a couple few hundred years before what we see in Game of Thrones, and it's mostly focused on the Targaryen dynasty. But yes, on the former number one Game of Thrones podcast in the world, Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, Barrett Dudley and I will be breaking down every episode of House of the Dragon in the same way we did for Game of Thrones. Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. 20 more days until House of the Dragon airs. August 21st is the premiere, and we will be dropping our episode ASAP after the premiere. So very excited. Go subscribe to Oysters, Clams, and Cockles and prepare your mind for House of the Dragon.
Is it the 21st or the 26th?
I think it's the 21st.
For some reason, I thought it was the 26th. I'm so excited for it. 21st? Why would I even doubt you?
You're the I don't know. Number one I was going to say, I've been having to promote this for like a month.
You're probably like, oh, fuck.
Fuck you, Jared.
Yes. If you, right now, wherever you're listening to this or watching this, go to Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. Check out that trailer breakdown. Folks, that does it for Freeze.
Oh, wait, hold on. Let me say a couple more things.
Okay.
A couple more things. All right. Okay. I want to redact my previous hate of Tessa Thompson. I was wrong. She's been great. I didn't understand the character enough at that point. All right. I think she has done a very good job of going from the cold-hearted, seemingly emotionless demon bot that she was in the first couple episodes to now a fully broken, desperate, and depressed god. That is... It has been a very cool character. I just didn't quite understand what I was like witnessing the first two episodes of this season. And I'm sorry. Tessa Thompson has been awesome. My dad got on my ass. He was like, why are you hating on Tessa, man? She's doing good. I guess he saw it before me, saw what she was trying to do before me. I've been happy with her character as far as she's developed it through six episodes. Aaron Paul, probably the actor I have made the most fun of.
I mean, definitely.
Out of any actor in the last several years.
Yeah.
And I am very impressed. This dude has stepped the fuck up. Like, do you know how hard it is to play yourself talking to yourself and actually make it creepy and scary instead of funny and idiotic? The only piece where he sort of, like, he still sold it. I just was like, all right, this is, you're acting right now. Is when he's on the phone with her at the end on the roof, because he has to get so emotional. And like, you've already seen him do so many weird things that it doesn't hit all of the way like I would have wanted it to. Like, I should have been crying there and I wasn't. And I'm thoroughly impressed, bro. Like, even on the phone call, he delivers the phone call and the message, the apology, all that. Tells her she's going to win, like, encourages her while doing the fucking ticks and, like, decomposing as a host at the exact same time, which is the only thing that made it a little bit funny to watch. But outside of that, he's just done a great job. I mean, it's hard to do what he is doing and not look like a dumbass, which is exactly how he looked in season 3. So I think he probably watched season 3, wasn't all that impressed with what they had put together either, and really came to play this season, and he has killed it, man. This is the first thing where I'm like, I genuinely enjoy you as a piece of this show or movie. First thing he's done since Breaking Bad where I'm like, this is a good cast job.
Was he good in Breaking Brad as well?
Breaking Brad was tight. Yeah, it was about what happens when he comes back after the El Camino spinoff movie. He meets a neighbor named Brad, and then they sell meth together, and it just repeats.
That does it for Freezall Motor Functions Season 4, Episode 6 Recap. You can and should follow us on Instagram at Freezall Motor Functions.
Oh, I got one more thing. Sorry, Jared. When he calls her up and he's like, Cookie, is the first thing he says to her. He calls his daughter, C, whose name is...
Frankie.
And instead of saying Frankie, because his brain is going haywire, he goes, Cookie, Frankie.
And I didn't even catch that.
And Serena, again, not with us today, sent us a cookie monster. C is for cookie. And I fucking lost it because that is hilarious because that is obviously why he says cookie, because C is for cookie. Back to you, Jared.
Her name is C.
Yeah.
Do you think C stands for cookie?
Cookie. Nah, her name's Frankie. She just goes by C in the Rebellion.
It cannot be a coincidence that she goes by C, and then Caleb calls her Cookie.
It's because C is for Cookie.
No, I know.
His brain goes Sesame Street.
But why do you think she calls herself C? Do you think C is for Cookie? Is that her nickname? Frankie, Cookie? I could see it.
I don't know. I thought maybe that was a father's nickname for his daughter, but that's a good question.
But then you were tainted by the meme.
I was tainted by the meme that Serena sent, C is for Cookie. That is all. I swear to God, I have nothing else.
Follow us on Instagram at Freezall Motor Functions.
Oh, I have one more thing. I'm not joking. I'm sorry. Is Charlotte Hale... All right, this is serious. This is a serious question.
Okay.
Is Charlotte Hale infected already? If her whole concern here is that dealing with outliers poisons her hosts, right? And as... Bless you. Gesundheit.
That wouldn't have been on mic.
That's true. If I hadn't continued the episode, this is on me. This two sneezes are on me, and I will fully accept that. I will fully accept that. All right. Her whole concern is that her hosts are interacting with outliers, becoming infected and killing themselves. And Caleb tells her, they're not killing themselves because they're infected. They're killing themselves because you suck so hard that they don't want to be around you, which is also just like kind of waving your dick at God if you're whoever wrote that line, because it sort of implies that human beings are so miserable down here on your creation that we're offing ourselves, which is obviously a thing that happens. But all that said, he is an outlier. He is the outlier, right? She's copying him over and 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 over, and they have probably what is their most genuine interaction possible on that roof after she's exposed to his pure human emotion in the phone call with Cookie. And that immediately follows her going to scratch the shit out of herself and what I saw is at least consider jumping off the roof.
I mean, to your point, okay, so I think she may be infected. However, it seems like you can only be infected by a human, not a human in a host body.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Maybe his humanity can't be snuffed out.
Yes, so if that's what you're saying, then you're saying this is like I was a nuclear engineer for 50 years, and 50 years of getting one radon a day
eventually
builds up over time, and then you become infected.
I like that, Jared. I like that. And now I will shut my computer and not speak anymore. I swear to God.
Shut your fucking hole, too.
I'm done. And my holes. All of them.
Instagram.
Use me.
At Friesel Motor Functions. Twitter and TikTok, at Friesel Motor. If you prefer to watch your podcasts, every episode of Friesel Motor Functions is also available on YouTube. Ross, they can you can talk. Where can they follow you?
At WR Bolin on Twitter and Instagram. Listen to the Ross Bolin podcast wherever podcasts are played. And check out Oysters, Clams, and Cockles when House of the Dragon airs August 21st.
You can follow me at Jared Borislow on all social media. And if you like Formula One, check out Formula Bone, my Formula One content brand. Time for the NPR style sign off.
J-Bone.
Friesel Motor Functions has been brought to you by Bolin Media, and it's hosted by me, Jared Borislow, along with Ross Bolin and Serena. The show is produced by me, Jared Borislow. Special thanks to Phil from DC, aka Schnapple, on SoundCloud for our intro music, and Brad Hess for our outro music. Until next time, folks.
Bam, bam, bam. Bam.
Motor functions.